Welcome to Movies, Films, and Flicks. I am Mark Hoffmeyer, and joining me is a man who cried so much during Avengers Infinity War that the tears that dropped into his popcorn added an extra salty flavor, which made the experience more bittersweet. It's John Levengood.
I wasn't crying. You were crying.
Normally we jump into this, but I just want to get this right off the bat. This is a spoiler podcast for Avengers Infinity War, so if you haven't seen it yet, I would definitely watch it first because we're going to be dropping a lot. Like, we're going to spoil everything.
Everything.
Like, in a good way, though. We're not going to, like, make the movie worse.
A resplendent way.
Yeah, we're like, spoiling it in a good way.
It's deliciously spoiled.
I mean, you cried so much. It was, I mean, there was water just dripping into your popcorn. Like, what were your thoughts about all these tears?
I have a feeling that those were really the tears of my eyes trying to focus so much on all the action on screen for almost every single minute of running time of this movie.
Yeah, Megan, my wife, told me that whenever something cool happened, I would look at her and be like, oh my gosh! And then I would miss like four things.
Yeah, dude, so much happens in this. I mean, people like to joke, and sometimes you see like this action-packed movie and you're like, this was like one giant action sequence. No, this movie has more action, I think, in running time than non-action.
Yeah. I mean, it is wall to wall.
It might have twice the action of any other movie that I thought had more action.
It has double the action of Bad Boys 2.
Which is, I didn't even know was possible.
I mean, like, and you know what's, I followed it. I knew what was going on during all the action scenes.
So, yeah, I mean, I have a feeling that the very next time I watch this, I'm going to catch stuff that it's going to be like Fight Club the second time, but it's just like, cause you know what's going on. Like, now you're going to find all the nuance. In this case, it's going to be like people who were getting battered around on screen that you didn't even see the first time, I think.
I didn't even try to stay with everything.
Oh, it's impossible.
I just kind of let the experience wash over me, and then when I watch it again and again, I'll probably pick up everything else.
This was, in its entirety, as an action movie, what the elevator scene in Cabin in the Woods was for one scene.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, when they got off the elevators and just...
Yeah, when all the monsters just come off at once, and like you see it for 3 seconds, and it's like, there's no way you could even account for half the things that you just saw. Like, I feel like a lot of the fight scenes were like that.
Yeah, I mean, there was a lot. It just started and kept going. This is a $400 million movie.
Yeah, okay, I was wondering what the budget was. Just with the cast alone, like, this had to be tremendous.
I mean, it's already made $620 million. So, but it's probably going to have to clear $1 billion to make a profit. Which is kind of crazy.
It'll do it, though.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it'll do it by the end of the week.
Yeah, I'm going to buy this on 4K basically as soon as I can, even though it'll be overpriced, just because I want to see it again sooner and remind my... I almost want to show people who missed it in theaters and be like, dude, I'm telling you, this has more action than anything you've ever seen. Take Fast 5 and then Fast and Furious 6, and this has more action than like both of them put together.
And then add John Wick in there.
Right, to the John Wick 2 power. Like, it's just, this really is ridiculous. I used to feel like I had a good grip on, oh, all these movies have so much. This is just a new level of, I wonder if, like, a filmmaking, a film school professor would use this as an example of how not to make a movie, because there's almost no exposition or development. It's just action.
You know, there's a the New Yorker wrote a review for it, and they're like, characters just appear on screen, and we're supposed to know who they are. I'm like, well, they've been doing this for 10 years.
This is basically the MCU part, 14 or something?
19.
I'm sorry, 19. But I mean, these movies, it's like Captain America Civil War. I remember my biggest criticism wasn't really negative. It's just that this didn't feel at all like a Captain America movie. This just felt like an Avengers movie. But all these movies... Well, most of these movies are really doing that, although Ant-Man and Spider-Man Homecoming did a good job of acknowledging their existence in the MCU without being about it. But like than other ones, they were all about it. Like a Thor sequel and Captain America 3 were additional Avengers movies. And that's fine. But yeah, this is a big development.
I just thought it was funny, though, because, like, you don't go to Avengers Infinity War expecting every character to be reintroduced. Like, James Gunn made a joke. He's like, I'm watching Game of Thrones Season 8, and I don't know who these people are just on the screen. Who are they? Like, you don't go into this thinking, like, I want to know more about this Iron Man guy.
This is almost like the Saw series of movies, because Saw was one of those unique horror series of movies where if you did not see part 3 and or 4 really recently, you don't know what the hell is happening in 5. I still remember, I think we talked about this on the pod, how when I was seeing the later sequels of those movies and I had only seen the previous sequel once in theaters and then a whole year passed, like I started thinking these movies were terrible. When I rewatched all the movies over the course of 2 months, I was like, this is like horror writing auteurship. Like this is really impressive how they meshed them. It's just that the sequel becomes stupendously dependent on its antecedents, which is not normal in these films.
Yeah.
I mean, in films, in sequels in general. Usually they're like, in the first 5 minutes, we're basically going to catch you up and remind you, oh yeah, remember this, that, and the other happened. Cool, weird exposition. All right, go with the movie. But this, you can't do that. There's so much.
And I guess before we get into the questions, where would you rank this? I know it's relatively fresh. I don't think I'd put this in my top three. And I guess I like Iron Man, Iron Man 3, Thor Ragnarok. I like those movies better, but you can't compare like Avengers Infinity War to Iron Man. Some people are kind of like, hey, I missed the human villain, like a Killmonger or a Zemo, but this isn't meant to be a standalone movie with, like, you know, this is just meant as a spectacle movie.
So, yeah, I was going to say basically that. Yeah, this movie is just a 2.5 hour actiongasm with the just enough exposition to hold the action scenes together. Whereas Iron Man, I thought, was maybe the best written of all of the MCU movies. The way the character came about, just the way they did everything. It was brilliantly staged and written, and everything felt really, really urgent. There wasn't a lot of action, so it felt really intense when it happened, and everything was great, right? This again, there's like no writing. There's like, there were basically 10 sentences of actual writing that could have mattered. And I'm not trying to say that's a bad thing. I'm just saying they were just getting us to oh my God. It's Bruce Banner. Where'd you come from? Oh yeah, I was just in space. And oh, by the way, the Hulk isn't coming out when I want him to anymore. And oh yeah, these horrible things are coming. And then next action scene, you know, it's, hey, it's some dude floating in space. We're just the Guardians of the Galaxy. We don't know who you are. That was like the longest exposition in the whole movie was them meeting. Yeah. But 2 minutes later, it's 2 minutes, 3 minutes. Separating, it might have been five, separating two bloated, awesome action sequences. We were just meeting new people and saying, hey, this is where we are in the movie. Go, go, go.
Yeah. I loved it. I thought they handled it really well. I was able to stay with it as a spectacle. I loved it. Hey, before we jump too far into this, Avengers wormhole, do you want to do our two listener questions real quick?
Oh, you know, I actually have a mailbag that I just got today with respect to our last episode on Shape of Water.
Nice. Do you want to do that one first and then we'll jump
into
it?
Yeah,
let's do it.
So Dave Koenig, who's written in a few questions lately and he's known as a fiend on film on Twitter, he says, I'm listening to the episode. He's talking about Shape of Water episode right now. And you are talking about the scene with the cats. I pretty much fell off my couch laughing during that scene. I told my wife, can you imagine if we were in the theater and that happened and angry cat lovers would be wondering who is laughing at this? And about why the creature might not have been able to heal himself earlier in the film. This was something that you and I discussed, Mark, yeah. What we thought was an incontinuity. He says it could be because the electricity drained his body of moisture. I don't know if I'm with him here, but while the bullets just went into him after he was basically rehydrated. Or could it be that he was just stronger at the end because he found true love? And that goes more to the fantasy aspect, I guess. But he was listening to our pod, and while he was listening to it, he was basically live messaging me as he was listening, which was kind of entertaining to me. Please do that.
I love that he almost fell off his couch when I went on my rant about cats.
No, yeah, and he was just writing. We even chatted a little bit about that, and he had some other commentary. I'm like, Dave, I'm not sharing that. You're going to upset Mark because he's a cat person. Dave is not a cat person.
Fishman knew what he was doing.
That's fair.
and as far as healing himself, I mean, homeboy Michael Shannon was going at him hard. Like, he just would pull him out and just zap him a whole lot. So, I mean, I guess it was just a lot of beat. Like, he probably healed himself once he got back in the water. But he was taking...
I'm a little curious, yeah. So Dave mentioned how, like, when the bullets just went into him, but at that point, he was still... We established that regular water doesn't help him. He was still, like, weak.
Yeah.
Like when his scales were coming off.
Because he was dying. He was dying.
Yeah. So I'd say, Dave, I disagree with that because he was still weak. That rain wouldn't have been helping him out. He needed the brine and the salt. But then there's just that kind of true love aspect. It's like we've said about zombies. A zombie is as dangerous as the scene is urgent to the main characters. Maybe his healing ability is as convenient and powerful as the situation is dire for him and his Stockholm syndromed loved one.
That reminded me of, what is it, The Karate Kid, where it's like, I am the man who will fight for your honor. I'll be the hero that you're dreaming of. Blah, blah, blah. The glory of love. The glory of love. Save Fishman.
And what was it? Was it the power of love for Back to the Future?
The power!
I mean, you know, like Huey Lewis and some of these other 80s songsters can really pull the power out of a nostalgic movie.
I believe in a thing called love.
But oh, Dave, man. thanks for writing in, Dave. And that was really entertaining to me on my Monday afternoon when a listener is just letting me, and Dave's a friend as well, but he's just writing along as he's listening to our podcast.
You know what you're doing, Fishman.
No, what's funny is that I was actually listening to our podcast at that time as well.
Oh, wow.
I was listening to it on and off all day today.
Fishman knew what he was doing. Thanos wouldn't eat a cat.
He would kill half the cats, though.
Thanos would like cats. I think he'd be big into, like, spading and neutering cats.
I mean, so instead of half the cats being mercifully obliterated in his Marvel rapture, instead would he just spay and neuter half the cats?
Yeah, just
spay and then all the cats would remain?
Yeah.
Wait, but then our overcatulation would actually get worse. There would be disproportionately fewer housed cats we lost half the cat owners.
There's going to be a lot of homeless cats in Avengers.
Or they're just going to take over.
There's cats locked in homes.
It's going to become like that movie, A Sound of Thunder, when they come back to their regular time and evolution went totally differently and there were those baboon velociraptor things running around.
Jesus, please.
Cats will have this weird evolution and there will be cat people walking around.
So in the beginning, all right, I have a question. Thanos let 50 in the beginning. He gets on the Asgardian ship. He lets 50% of them go. Did they get halved again?
That's so because he was doing his big mission, right? But I have a question of time for this too, because Thanos is really, really, really old. And so, did he do that 1,000 years ago or a week ago?
What?
His Asgard rapture.
Oh, the ship?
I
think he did it almost immediately after they took off. Because remember, they were up in the air, then he caught them, and then they jumped over to the Guardians, so it all happened pretty quick.
Yeah, okay. Oh, you know, I'm thinking of his other raptures, when like the things that we saw that he was doing in the past.
Oh,
like
Gamora. I don't know how.
Yeah, like on other planets, for example, like were some of his doings like 1,000 years ago and those planets have since repopulated and now they're getting halved again.
If I was Thanos, I would go into restaurants and I would take half of people's food.
You'd solve a lot of the obesity problem in America.
And I would just be like, I'm doing this for you. And then I eat half of their grouper sandwich.
Wait, hold on. You just took the mercy out of his application, though. He just let people go painlessly. That is the most painful way for me to lose half a meal, is to see someone else eat it.
Especially Thanos. And Thanos just looks at you the entire time while he's eating your grouper sandwich.
I'm going to tackle him.
You would tackle Thanos because he ate your grouper sandwich?
I would try. Dude, I recently ate a very, very good grouper sandwich in South Tampa. So if it was that one, I might tackle him like he was stupid enough to dip an axe in a poison fish. And you have to be a really deep Movies, Films, and Flicks fan to get that reference.
That's like our first episode. I think after you tried to tackle Thanos, he would look at you and be like, I like you. And then he would take your fries.
Like he might spare me like he spared Gamora?
Yeah, he would just walk around. Have you seen that Phil Hartman SNL episode where he plays Clinton and he goes into a McDonald's and starts eating people's food?
What?
That's what Thanos would do.
I wish that this really happened in real life with Bill Clinton.
Yeah, Bill Clinton, he went for a jog and just ate everyone's McDonald's.
Hey, how's it going? Oh, fries. I don't know if that's what Bill Clinton really sounds like anymore.
Watch the SNL skit. You'll see it. And then imagine Thanos in a restaurant.
Would he do it like a bully? Like, would he just like look you in the eye and without even looking where his hand is going, pick up a fry and put it to his mouth and eat it while staring at you without blinking?
I think he would. And he would have all those creepy people with him. Like Ma and like Ebony or like something Midnight, whatever her name was.
Like his giant dark elves.
Yeah, he had like, he had his gang with him and I forget their name. Oh, Proxima Midnight.
Oh, if you say that, the guy dark elf giant, the lady dark elf giant, and that big rock monster. Yeah, that's what I call him.
Cole Obsidian. I liked the Maw. He was cool. The floater dude who floated on stuff. But back to
the guy with all the telekinesis?
Yeah, big fan of his.
When I first saw him, I was like, oh, what like a milquetoast, boring looking alien villain. And then he started doing his thing. I'm like, this dude is easily, in the first moment he shows any of his powers, he's like instantly the most badass Magneto we have ever seen.
Yeah, dude was a gangster.
And like, just like that.
Do you think he would, when they're with Thanos and McDonald's, do his four people get to eat too?
I think he's good to them.
Yeah.
I think he's good. I think it's almost just like, it's almost like the old merrymaking, like Valhalla halls. I think that you wait for your conquering leader to take the first bite, but then everybody sups and drinks and makes merry.
And then Thanos picks up the tab or kills people and doesn't pay.
I think that Thanos, in Thanos's world, there is no tab.
So I just thought about this. In Guardians of the Galaxy, I like Ronan the Accuser more now. Cause he's supposed to get a stone for Thanos. He gets the stone. He's like, man, you called me boy, Thanos. I'm coming for you. Like Ronan wanted to kill Thanos.
Well, he had a stone.
That's awesome, though. Like, Ronan's like, I'm gonna kick your ass, Thanos.
You give us a little bit of a magical item, and we all feel tough, don't we?
Ronan was a gangster who lost to a dance contest.
Pretty much. I mean, he just stood there and stared.
Yeah, I don't know. I like that he was gonna go after Thanos. All right, let's get to this question here.
Okay.
It's from Chris, and he wrote, I noticed that there are a lot of articles online saying that the actor who played Thanos is actually really hot. Who is Josh Brolin? If that's your thing, do you think there's some type of bad boy appeal to Thanos, or do you think ladies would be like, ew, look at your chin?
I have a feeling that no, I'm not trying to speak for women as if I know women here, but I have a feeling that, like, so he's a tough dude, a tough, determined dude. I think that a lot of women probably find Josh Brolin attractive in general, and then I think that a strong chin is attractive, and this is, again, like, there are female characters in the comic realm that I find attractive that don't really look like a human could look. Well, Thanos looks like a human couldn't really look, even just by the dimensions of his head. And I don't know, like maybe someone thought his voice was sexy. Maybe someone just liked those Brolin eyes looking out at him.
He did cry. He showed emotion.
That was true, yeah, and he was sweet to baby Gamora, even though he was slaughtering everyone she knew to a 50-50 coin toss.
Do you think he loved Nebula? I think he loved Gamora, but I don't think he loved Nebula.
I think that, well, he clearly chose Gamora first. Like, I'm assuming that was his first spared person. I don't know how Nebula was spared or came into his tutelage or parenthood, but because Gamora won and was stronger, or maybe what he perceived as more determined or whatever, that would have won his favor. Because, of course, Nebula was punished with each loss, right? Yeah. She was made more robotic, which is, God, what a brutal thing. So maybe it's that he only loved Gamora, even.
So, you know, he's a bad boy. He's Josh Brolin. Like, could there be a Beauty and the Beast scenario? Like, would Emma Watson fall in love with Thanos if she was trapped in a magical castle?
It could be. But I got to tell you, you know, I think that we all know people who are attracted to other people where we're just like, I don't know what you see, especially like celebrities. It's easy to use that. My mother, my entire life. I mean, I remember this when I was maybe like just 10 or 12 years old, and she said it her whole life. My mother would say that Mick Jagger is the sexiest man alive. And I'm just like, he is one of the weirdest looking people. He looks like a tall, gangly newt that needs to eat a sandwich to me. That's what he looks like to me. But she thought he was the sexiest. Sorry, Mick, if you're listening, but she thought he was the sexiest man alive, period. No, it's like, Mom, what about? No, she wouldn't hear it. So with that in mind, right? Like, maybe someone, a lot of people are just going to find certain things attractive that most of the people around them just don't see. And maybe this is one of those things. And the dude was jacked, though, too. Like, he was, when he first fought Hulk, I thought that it was really the Infinity Stone that he already had that made him strong. When really, it's just he is weirdly powerful already, and then he also happens to have the powers from these stones that have nothing to do with his pugilistic talents and super Hulk strength.
Yeah, we were talking about that, and when I was watching that, I'm like, is Thanos throwing combos? Like, he was leading with the jab, he was using footwork to get out of the way of Hulk's massive Hulk was kind of throwing like he was just sort of, there's no rhyme or reason. He was just kind of, I'm trying to think of the punches that he was throwing. Haymakers.
And then, just wild haymakers.
And then Thanos was using footwork in his jab. And I'm like,
yeah, he took small steps.
Yeah.
He moved forward with every punch almost.
Like, he punches in bunches. That's what you're supposed to do. And like, he wasn't like he wasn't just loading up for his big right. So I'm sitting here like watching this fight and I'm like, does Thanos know how to box? That's pretty cool.
Well, but we do know though, he's really old.
Yeah.
I don't know if he's thousands of years old, but he's had a lot, like he could have just dedicated 1 hour a year to boxing and he would have boxed more than Muhammad Ali, perhaps.
Who taught him how to box?
Dude, maybe he just learned how to box by fighting dragons. I don't know. So someone powerful.
What if he learned how to box by watching Rocky IV?
Over and over again.
And he just threw, no defense. And he's just throwing haymakers. You gotta take one to give one. Right.
That took us on a beautiful tangent.
Next one here. Chris goes, although the scene was very brief, you could tell that there is a kind of sexual tension between Bruce Banner and Shuri. Let's just say they had a child. How would that kid, would that kid be super smart, half Hulk, ultimate fighter? What would Shuri and Bruce Banner's kid be like? I mean, it would be very smart.
Okay, Bruce Banner's kid would be able to defeat Thanos because not only would you have at least some Hulk strength, assuming that that is sexually transmissible, hereditary, whatever, or not sexually transmissible, hereditary, but so you'd have a green African who has perhaps impenetrable skin already, right? His Hulk skin with access to the power flower, though. So even if he wasn't full Hulk, he has access to the power flower that they give to their Black Panther king. Who knows what that does to, like, does it magnify? Maybe he turns out stronger than dad. And he has access to vibranium.
Yeah.
So his already impenetrable skin, magnified perhaps by power flower, has a vibranium skin suit. And they had vibranium weaponry and technology. And their technology, that teenage girl basically said that Bruce Banner's attempt at figuring out vision was cute. almost.
Yep. Yep.
So with that technology, right, and then their combat training that they're like all female King's Guard had, they were some. So he'd know how to fight. He'd have at least as tough a skin, be potentially as strong or stronger with the power flower, have all that great training, have access to better technology, the vibranium suit. We just made a Thanos.
Yeah, this thing would take Thanos out.
We just made a Thanos.
This child needs to happen.
I mean, that would be...
They say Captain Marvel's the most powerful character.
So what if... So they've got a lot of these flowers. Now, I realize this may violate everything that the Wakandans believe in, right? But what if they gave a dose of flower power to all the Avengers before they started fighting Thanos and his army?
Oh, man. I think they'd be against it.
Oh, no, I'm sure it, like, violates all of their beliefs and this, that, and the other, but...
Yeah, but didn't Michael B. Jordan as Killmonger, he destroyed all those. So maybe they're growing them back now and there's, like, a dearth of them.
Oh, that could be too. That could be too, yeah.
So, yeah, I mean...
No, that's a good point. I forgot that. So I forgot that.
They probably just didn't have them at their disposal.
Boy, if they had those flowers, Infinity War solved?
Infinity Skirmish. They just would have, beat the living daylights out of Thanos.
Right. he would have gone up to a Hulk that had a power flower dose, and like he would have thought, oh, I can box the crap out of this guy like I did earlier in the movie, and then boom, he just gets had.
Puny Titan.
Yeah, that'd be a tough kid, dude.
I like it. Thanks, Chris, for these questions, man. We really appreciated it.
That's a good. When I first read that question, I'm just like, that's a silly question. And then I thought about it, like, this is a great question. Really got me going.
All right, so we've already talked about a lot of the movie, but should we kind of? Honestly, there's too much of this film, John, for us to start from the beginning and get to the end. So, do we just want to do our favorite moments? Well, how do we want to tackle Avengers Infinity War?
We're going to tackle it like I would tackle Thanos if he took my grouper sandwich.
Yeah, jeez Louise.
In a total maelstrom of ideas. Just total chaos.
Just like, you know when people get in fights and it looks like there's like a tornado and like you two spinning around the restaurant while Bill Clinton's in the background eating burgers.
You're giving me a lot of credit here.
Hey, man. Yeah, I feel like if someone tried to eat your grouper sandwich, it'd be on.
I mean, it would be. There's no messing around there. Like, that was a good grouper sandwich. By the way, if you live in the Tampa area, Big Ray's Fish Camp. What? Big Ray's Fish Camp. He didn't pay me to say that.
All right, so we're celebrating 10 years of Marvel, started in 2008, all leads to this. It's about Thanos, the big purple man, trying to get all six Infinity Stones, which the stones have been featured in Thor, Captain America, the First Avenger. Basically, they're giant MacGuffins, and he has a gauntlet made by Peter Dinklage, and then this movie's just him running around trying to get the stones, and he succeeds.
Can we just start with Peter Dinklage, who is someone with achondroplasia, a dwarf, and he is playing an Asgardian dwarf that is gigantic.
Yeah, that was awesome. And what was that bit he had where Thor's like, I might die? Or he's like, you might die. Then Thor's like, yeah, I might die. And Dinklage is like, I just said that.
Yeah, I just... But we meet this giant Norse dwarf who had his hands removed because they were what he used to make these godly tools, the greatest weapons in the universe or something, right? Yeah. And so he has his hands taken away from him. And then Thor is all, but dude, he says the obvious. This is why I say the writing isn't exactly top notch in this. It's like, you have all those weapons in your head. It's like, oh, thanks, Thor. So then he like lowers down this mold for this god slaying axe. And all he has to do, because they already have the mold, is melt some special metal into it. He didn't have to make anything.
Yeah, you're right. Did he make the mold?
The mold was already made.
So he just had to get things hot, and that was it.
That's why he was even telling Thor, he's like, well, gosh, you're right, it is all in my head, but we already have the mold. And he, like, motions up to it with his stumpy, like, fake hand thing. By the way, it was nice that they made him fake hands.
Yeah.
To have, like, these prosthetics. But so, he motions up to it, and he just points to it, and he's like, but, you know, they turned out our star furnace kiln thing, whatever, and so we need to restart the star to melt the magic metal into the thing, and only a star is strong enough to do it. And that's what led us to the... But it's like, so... He's acting like he's crippled because he could have just been like, Thor, holy crap, thank God you're here. We just need to start the star furnace so we can melt this metal into this weapon I've already made a mold for.
Yeah, there was.
So you can go kill Thanos.
Yeah, there wasn't too much. And you know what's crazy? The Thanos killed 299 of his buddies, and he was the last one left.
Dude, that was just mean.
Yeah, he didn't have that population. He did a lot more than that.
He could not prepare food for himself.
Yep.
I don't know.
He 99.6 that population.
But so apparently, though, so then Thor has to go start this star up, which is what brought you to that comment that he might die. He's like, they started doing it and it broke basically. And he's like, I'll hold it open. And he's like, you could die. He's like, I could die. And he holds it open and like, but if he could die by making this, and presumably a non-god could not wield this weapon, wasn't that actually a stupid gamble on Thor's part?
I liked it. I thought Thor was the MVP of this movie. I just thought he knew he wasn't going to die. I think there was a chance of it. He just had to exact a toll on himself to get it made. And I think if that's the one thing that can kill Thanos, like if they fail, he won't have that weapon. It's either way. Yeah. So, I mean, I don't know. But I want to say, I think Thor was the MVP of this movie. And his initial scene with the Guardians had me laughing so hard. They're basically saying that Thor is a man and Quill is a dude. And then Quill starts speaking in a deep voice. They call him out for it. And Thor's like, are you mocking me? Then Peter's like, are you mocking me?
Why are you talking like me?
And then he called them a bunch of morons, called Rocket Raccoon a rabbit, and took off. But then he was suffering from like I love this thing with Gamora, where, you know, it's Thanos, that's her dad. And then he walks up to her and you think he's going to be mad. He goes, family. He's like, my brother tried to kill me. And my sister just came up and my mom's dead. And my dad passed away and my sister was trying to kill us all. So I thought that was one of the funniest touches of
families. and Rocket never corrects him about not being a rabbit because he instantly liked him so much.
Yeah, you're right. He never, like, he always gets so mad at people and he never
about everything
Thor.
about whatever he is, about being made in a lab, about whatever he is or isn't. And yeah, and he just took it because everyone was just enamored by Thor.
Yeah, so he was. Yeah, so I love that. I don't know. I love that. And what did you think about Loki and Heimdall dying?
That was fine. They needed to give us kind of like that precedent that a lot's at stake here. And those characters were really cool in the past. We had so many characters here. I didn't need all of them. So, you know, yeah, make your urgency statement. It's fine.
Is it bad that I didn't, so many people are like, there needs to be stakes. And I'm like, I don't want any of these people dying. Like, I know contracts and the story wise, you have to do it, but I've never been the person that's like, oh, in Marvel, they don't kill anybody. Like, I really, that's never bothered me about this world. Like, I don't really care if people die.
Oh, it didn't bother me. I think they were just making a point and I was fine with it in this movie. And it was fine. I mean, this was basically the real Ragnarok that Thor had to face.
Yeah, you're right.
And speaking of Thor Ragnarok, so it seems to me that the more characters you put in a film, the more you average their powers. If you put Thor on a screen alone or just with one other person, he's godly. You put Thor on a screen with 20 other Marvel characters, and he's just very, very, very tough. Like, because the electrical shock that he created in Thor Ragnarok, he created one burst of shock that just totally knocked Hulk out.
Yeah.
Right? One shock, like one god shock. And so if he was able to do that in this movie, he could have crackled a bunch of those minion monsters when they were having that Starship Troopers attack on Wakanda. He could have done it maybe to Thanos. Maybe that would have been a good stun. But he didn't have any of that in this movie. His god crackle.
God crackle. And,
like, that's what you call it. When he was just crackling electricity and pulling a fire starter and practically blowing up Hulk.
That never bothered me though. Like, there's some, you could probably pick this movie apart. Certain scenes, like, and sometimes people were more powerful. Like Wanda, I never knew Scarlet Witch was that powerful.
Well, again, averaging effect.
Oh, cause she was on the screen by herself holding those people back.
But, and that goes with the zombie urgency too. My classic zombie. You are as powerful as the scene is dire.
Yeah, but you know what though? I never sat in the theater worried about it. Like,
no. But you see, when Thor came on the scene, it's not that I'm picking it apart in hindsight, which I quite often do. It's that while we were watching the movie, I'm looking over at my cousin Ryan, who's there with me. I'm like, dude, he's gonna Thor crackle the crap out of Thanos, and he never did. And I'm like, dude, Thor, do your electrical, like, lightning storm him. And he doesn't. And so there's something that I know for a fact that Thor is capable of, and it is a power that he just recently gained, and I don't see it. So that was my problem. I'm not picking something apart. I'm saying that they took away a power.
Oh, gotcha.
That I knew he had.
Do you think Hela could have taken out Thanos?
Well, without my putative averaging effect, boy, she was irregularly powerful. So
what about Ego?
I think that the only reason that we saw Ego defeated was because he dedicated so much of his efforts to turning his son to the dark side.
Yeah.
So I mean if Ego wanted the Guardians dead in the first, they'd just be dead. I mean Ego would have been one hell of a force. Would he have to have his planet with him though to do it? Well, he is the planet, I guess.
Yeah, he built that planet, but he is the planet.
So, but I mean, I don't know much about the comic universe and Ego's powers. So I guess this is a wild card, but I mean, he's a celestial. He is also some manner of god like Thor is. I feel like you could give him a good run for his money. But again, if you had Thor with his powers from Thor Ragnarok, I think Thor could have won.
Yeah, the Crackle Thor?
Yeah, Crackle Thor. Snap, Crackle, Thor.
What about Kevin Bacon?
From?
Footloose.
Oh, I mean, just dance him off?
Yeah.
I mean, he'd save the world from Thanos one small town dance off at a time. What would happen?
Remember that line where, like, is Footloose still the greatest movie ever made? It never was.
It never was.
Sorry to interrupt you. What were you going on there?
No, it was great. But like, so, but what if that Kevin Bacon, what happens when Star-Lord witnesses this dance-off start? Does Star-Lord interrupt the dance-off that would save the world to turn it into like, whoa, Kevin Bacon?
Yeah, he would get jealous. He would wreck it.
You off.
He would wreck it like he did in the movie. I thought he became part god in Guardians 2.
But he's half god. No, he turned it down.
Oh, yeah.
When he destroyed Ego, that half of him.
You're right.
But there is a lot of godliness in the timeline, too, that isn't even the static characters with that in mind. It's like there are a lot of – this has always been a thing with the Marvel Universe. Like you see on Facebook or even before Facebook, back in the days of Wizard Magazine in the 90s, they would say like, you know, five comic heroes that could defeat Superman, or the five most powerful, this, that, or the other. And it's like, there are so many just galaxy destroying capable characters. It's just that they're normally not on screen or in one storyline at the same time. But there's so many of these uber powerful things. We threw a bunch of them at Thanos, but again, none of them really brought their A game.
Yeah.
They brought their heart, the A-game heart, right, and effort. but like the abilities were tuned down a little.
You know what's a great point? You remember on Princess Bride where Andre the Giant is like, fighting one person is a lot different than fighting a group.
Mm-hmm.
And he lost that one person. So when people are on their own, they're stronger. But when you're in the group, you don't really turn it up because you're like, I'm in a group.
Well, don't be wrong. Thor can't snap, crackle, pop Thanos if all his buddies are nearby. He'd be like, guys, you all got to clear a path.
Yeah,
but Thanos wouldn't just stand there and let it happen.
Yeah, he would literally blow up everybody. Poor Falcon would get destroyed.
Well, this is me a little picky, but my cousin Ryan was yelling this at the screen while we were watching the movie.
He was yelling at the screen?
Oh, yeah. Because so Victor Wong, can't remember the character's name, and Doctor Strange were doing their portal thing, right? And at one point, they close the portal on giant rock monster's hand, and he loses his hand.
Yeah.
Okay. He brought up, why aren't they using that in more of an attack fashion, open a portal under Thanos when they have him kind of stunned and then close it halfway through him so he's just cut in half?
That'd be too practical.
Or just do it, or just portal, get his hand through it, de-portal, now there's just a severed limb with the glove.
You know, Thanos has no way to track stones, does he?
I was going on the assumption that he was tracking them somehow, because he knew. How did he know to come to Earth in the first place for these stones?
Like a heat signature?
Or something? I have a feeling that he had, what was Super Telekinetic guy's name?
Maw.
Maw. I think that he had Maw, because he seemed to be the brains over there, among his henchmen. I think Maw was like going on the computer command center and like looking things up, or maybe there were, you know, it's almost like Dr. Glass. In Unbreakable, he was looking for articles with that phrase, you know, one sole survivor. Maybe Maul was basically just looking through radio waves or some communication patterns all across the galaxy with some super strong something or other, looking for certain patterns in communication that were telling a certain narrative that would allow you to identify someone with such power.
Yeah. And he tortured people because he said he was good at that.
And he tortured people.
When he was floating on that concrete, John, I wasn't into that. I felt like that's cheating.
I didn't mind it. I now that you say it, it was just done for the sake of the effects people and the director being like, this would look cool, maybe. But
if I was a superhero, I'd be like, you're a jerk.
Unless he just can't levitate himself. Oh, but he did. He could levitate himself. We saw that. So it was totally needless. There's no reason to do that.
He just did it to cause property destruction.
He was just protecting himself from an attack from directly beneath him.
I mean, it looked cool, but I was like, if I was a superhero, I'd be like, get over yourself.
Get over yourself, Maw. He was interesting though. I'm assuming he's from the comic books.
I mean, he was a company man.
But yeah, he was really powerful, dude. He was really powerful.
I wasn't quite sure what the powers of the other crew were of Thanos.
Well, I think that the Dark Elf Lord things were just more Dark Elves from whatever Thor movie it was that had the Dark Elves. Or was that the second Avengers movie?
No, the Dark Elves were Thor the Dark World.
Okay. I think that these are giant versions of those elves, and that they were just tough. Maybe experimented on? Boy, I don't even know. Yeah, they were just really great warriors, weren't they? And they were quite tough to kill.
They were on my crew, I'd be happy.
And then they had that big Grignak, that big rock monster dude.
That dude was big.
with his that weapon of his was like Soul Calibur meets Scorpion meets Brotherhood of the Wolf bone chain sword. Like that was a bonkers weapon.
Thanos really brought it.
He had a good team. And then Maw. And Maw was again he was just totally I like company man. Yeah, totally devoted. Very powerful. Really?
I love that he got Boba Fetted.
Poor you know, guy.
They just sucked him out into space. Because of that ancient movie Alien.
Did you see that really old movie Alien? I was howling when he said that.
Yeah, I love it.
And Tony Stark at one point is like, if you say one more pop culture reference, you're out of the Avengers.
What did you think about the Doctor Strange Iron Man relationship?
Well, first off, they're like the same character with different origins.
Yeah. I mean, I think Tony's more quippy. And then, cause Doctor Strange doesn't really have quips. He has more Doctor Strange isn't quippy. He's more of like, what's the word? Just like a
dismissive superior asshole-y.
Yeah, there we go.
But yeah, I see it's like a different brand of it. Yeah. It's, and they have very similar facial hair.
Yeah. There was a lot of goatee work in this.
One has a self-thinking computer that can man his suits. The other has a self-thinking intelligent magical cloak. And both of those things save them at times.
I love when the cloak got a hold of Drax.
That was cool. And also when the cloak was wrestling Thanos.
Dude, that cloak is so loyal to Doctor Strange, it wrestles with Thanos.
So my cousin's daughter, we brought two of his daughters to see this, and his 9-year-old, who might have seen Doctor Strange, but, you know, doesn't have a good grip on the characters and their timelines, she thought there was an invisible man in that cloak. She kept referring to the invisible man. I'm like, I don't know what you're talking about. And it's like, remember, it was holding his hand with his cloak. I'm like, oh, the cloak is the character.
Oh, so she thought there's an invisible man in the cloak?
She thought that the cloak, right, and I totally get why a kid would think that. It's like she thought it was an invisible man in a cloak.
Was that too scary for 9-year-olds?
Not if I'm the Uncle John and Ryan is the father.
Gotcha.
These kids, so even her younger sister watched Gremlins on Christmas Eve with us for the last 2 straight years, and the younger one is 5, but she thinks that it's a cat. She thinks the gremlins are cats.
Man, what's with all this cat hate today?
No, in a good way.
I'm joking.
In a good way. Cause I remember Ryan was telling me that when his daughter was like 2.5 and they had the movie on, he's just thinking, she's too young to even know what's going on. This won't bother her. She's like, Daddy, is that a cat?
Nice. Gizmo. They should have added the gremlins to fight Thanos.
But yeah, there is admittedly a lot of violence in these movies, but you know, it's like, when you have 2 children watching a movie with no context by themselves, they're going to create their own sense of what it's like. But when they're with us and we're identifying who the heroes are and we are, you know, rooting for the good guys and, you know, it takes away a lot of the fear. And boy, there were a lot of young kids in the theater with us.
Yeah, because there were some gnarly moments. Some kids behind me were reacting pretty strongly to it, but they were like 4 or 5. I was like, geez, Louise. All right, so hey.
No, we start them young.
So I say what we do now is you and I don't move for about an hour. We become invisible.
Except for my cloak.
Yeah, and then we eat some corn chips and interrupt people. And once we master on how to be invisible, we'll come back from break. And we'll talk more about Avengers Infinity War. Welcome back to Movies, Films, and Flicks. If you guys look out wherever you're at right now, look straight in front of you. You can't see me.
Because I'm invisible.
Yeah. So guys, I've been working really hard at this. So look behind. If you're driving, obviously don't do it, but if you're running somewhere, if you're doing laundry, I'm there. You just can't see me.
Eating some kind of space kibble snack.
I'm like the John Cena of...
When Drax was giving that whole spiel of... it's like, how long have you been standing there? An hour. First off, that in itself was almost as funny as everything that followed. Yep. It's like, how long have you been standing there? An hour. It's like... I've spent decades or whatever it was, like, you know, honing my stealth. When I sit perfectly still, I become perfectly invisible and you can't even see me right now.
I thought that was really, like, think about it. He wasn't invisible, but they didn't see him there for an hour. So he's obviously good at staying very still.
Well, I mean, he is also like a dark blue tone with those red marks that can emulate some shadows against a bluish, grayish metal background on the ship.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he definitely blended in, but it's still...
He's in his natural habitat there.
I don't want to take it away from what he was able to pull off, though.
But, I mean, he wasn't like Chevy Chase Memoirs of an Invisible Man, where I can see you vomiting out your lunch, like, from your stomach that you just ate because you're so invisible. He was just like, boy, God, that was really so funny.
He was there for an hour and no one noticed him. Or they did, and they just forgot about him. Either way, I don't want to take away from what he did. I think that was pretty impressive.
I gotta say, the humor of the Drax character, because in the first Guardians of the Galaxy, I thought it was just topped out awesome. Then in the second movie, I felt they were trying a little too hard, and I was a little disappointed in the Draxisms. And now I feel like they got the original magic that made Drax work and brought it back. Back right. to a top tier. Like, I mean, Drax was still funny in Guardians 2. Dave Bautista does a great job of this. But I mean, it's just Guardians 2 to me was the inferior Drax performance out of the three.
I loved it when he's like, "You're beautiful on the inside." I take massively large craps.
Massively large.
All right. Question three. Want to jump into it?
Question three.
All right, so this one is from Riley, and he asks, will Scott Lang come and save the day and kill Thanos by himself?
And then go ahead.
And then he said he would love it if Scott Lang got into Thanos' nose and just smashed his brain from the inside.
Yeah, I'd be down for that.
I mean, he could get in there and really do some work.
I mean, well, what if Thanos is so strong that when he snot rockets him, he breaks all of Ant-Man's bones?
But... So if he gets into the brain and Thanos starts snot loogieing, like if he starts shooting some snots, Ant-Man isn't going to come flying out.
I mean, if he gets into the brain, it means he's already tearing through some tissue in there.
So what if Ant-Man gets in his brains and then Groot shoves his little wooden things up Thanos' nose so then he can't snot?
Like a mummy. Like in The Mummy to kill him.
Yeah. And then the cloak wraps around Thanos' head.
I mean... He's pretty tough, though. He did take that god-killing axe to the chest, and he's just like, should have gone for the head, snap.
But Ant-Man's in the head. Just
if you got him in the head, I don't know. That
he's messing up his synapses. What do you think?
I wonder what it would take to pierce Thanos' head. Because we saw him bleed a tiny bit. Remember, there was a joke, all that for a drop of blood from Iron Man. So he's clearly, like... nigh impenetrable. He's very Hulk-like in that respect. It's hard to get blood out of Hulk. But like, I wonder what it would have took. Like, if you gave Hulk a vibranium sword.
Yeah.
This is very doable in this world. Just give Hulk a bladed vibranium weapon. Would that, assuming he could make contact with his wild swings, but would that just slice through Thanos' head?
I mean, Tony cut him with just his suit.
Well, I mean, he scratched him.
Yeah. But he didn't even have vibranium, right? Or is that suit all vibranium? No, that suit's not all
vibranium.
No.
I just think it's some, you know, it's some super alloy that he made, something rather. But it was presumably something on Earth that was just made with his level of science, not vibranium. Boy, if he had a vibranium suit, there's another thing that maybe could have been done. I don't know if that's doable or not in this world, but
What if they gave Scott Lang mini Ant-Man vibranium knives? So once he gets in Thanos' brain, he's just like, just hacking that thing up.
You know, so by the way, on the note of Ant-Man, so I saw the new Ant-Man trailer, and I don't really know what the plot's about based on the trailer, but right before this movie. So afterwards, the movie ends, I look at my cousin, and I think I even talked to you about this. It's like, wait. So if the MCU movies take place one after another, after another, after another, does that mean that Hank Pym, Scott Lang, and Wasp Woman, can't think of the character's name, were all spared from the rapture, or that this takes place on a concurrent timeline or in the past or something, which they haven't done really in the MCU?
I think this is on maybe a parallel timeline, because if you can't tell a funny movie after 50% of the population just died. So it's probably like a concurrent one that ends with that
event.
Yeah, and then somehow they're able to maybe find Captain Marvel in the quantum realm.
Yes, so like I was assuming that that movie would follow this movie story-wise as the other movies did, and that they just happened to be spared. What, 1 in 8 chance that 3 people are all spared from the Thanos rapture. It's nothing astronomical. It's no lottery win. And I figured that they were just, you know, now the crack team using Pym's super special, sub-quanta Pym particle research, because they did imply that with that micro, not microcosmic as in a microcosm, but like, you know, a microcosmos, how like when you go down that small, it's like other fabrics, other dimensions are affected. And I just figured that the next Ant-Man would be them saving or reversing or recovering people who were raptured as if they had to go somewhere or something. But I mean, we were just wildly brainstorming as to how an Ant-Man movie would follow this movie. But perhaps Ant-Man's absence from this is him going parallel then.
I feel like it's just a nice sorbet.
It's a nice sorbet.
It's a nice palate cleanser.
didn't you actually say that about the first Ant-Man movie?
Yeah.
In our podcast?
Yeah. I'm reusing. It's just going to be nice. It's going to be a fun little thing. You got Michael Pena crushing people. Like, I love that character. You got mini cars becoming big cars, flipping other cars.
Has Michael Pena ever had a role that you didn't like?
No.
I think he's just wonderful.
You should go on YouTube. And if you haven't watched it, just YouTube him in Observe and Report. His character in Observe and Report is one of the weirdest comedic creations I've ever seen in my life. And he also
I haven't seen that movie.
Just YouTube him in that movie because he is crazy. And also he's in that 30 minutes or less. And it's not good, but he shows up and like people... He needs money from one of the characters, Jesse Eisenberg or Aziz Ansari, and they like turn him down. And instead of getting mad at him, he's like, I'm proud of you guys. Like, good work. Like, he's going to get his money, but he's happy with them that they're actually fighting back. So I was like, I love Michael Pena comedy creations. And you got to Observe and Report's one of the nastiest movies. One of the, like, the hardest are comedically black films ever made, dark comedy. And, but Pena is just like, I'm gonna get you fucked up. And then they just go, they do all these drugs and they're like, it goes to very dark places. But his accent is so funny in it. So yeah, I'm a Michael Pena.
With all the Michael Pena and Ant-Man talk, also from the Ant-Man trailer, which you've seen, yes? Ant-Man trailer. Okay, so when Scott Lang sees Wasp Woman in action, he's like, oh, look at that. You gave her like blasters and wings. I guess you didn't have that technology when you made my suit. And he says, oh no, I had it. a nice sorbet indeed. That's going to be a lot of fun, that movie.
I like that he gave his daughter a better costume. Like that just makes me happy. Like he's like, no, my daughter gets the legit one.
Right.
All right, and the next question comes from Riley, and he asks, do you think Chris Pratt and Chris Hemsworth will fall in love in Part 2, Avengers Part 2?
Wait, I need to clarify this. Does he mean the actors at the time in reality when the next movie is released, or does he mean Star-Lord and Thor in the movie?
I'd say Star-Lord and Thor, and I don't...
Because those two are funny in interviews when I've seen them together. Yep. I could actually see them falling into a good bromance.
Well, Chris Hemsworth's wife said that Chris like thinks Pratt is awesome. So yeah, they got like a good bromance going on. But in this movie, I would say the characters. Okay. I don't think they would. I think Thor is just like a 1500-year-old obsessed, like a self-obsessed guy. Like he's not like a bromancer. Thor is.
So I think I agree with you that it's not going to happen. I think that Star-Lord will gradually pull a Parks and Rec Chris Pratt to Rob Lowe and just think that he's like the coolest guy and maybe have a man crush on him in the future.
Yeah. I think Thor would either be have like a good one with Drax or Rocket.
Yeah, yeah. But,
like I love you, little rabbit man.
Because it's also not contentious at that point.
Yeah, there's no competition. They just want to hang out with him.
And you know what else? I don't know if this was deliberate on the part of the writers, but the dynamic between Star-Lord and Thor was very similar to the dynamic between Thor and Hulk when they were just chatting in Thor Ragnarok.
Oh, yeah. I'd beat you up. I don't think that would happen. Oh, Thor like just fire. Hulk like smoldering fire.
Right. It was just like... Yeah, it's like if he's ever going to acknowledge him, it's always in an inferior comparison. It's like, but I defeated Hulk, defeat you, smash you like small. I mean, that, yeah. Just that playful little. Nah, I think we both got our jabs and I got big smashes in. You know, it's like just they seem to capture that without. And I'm only noticing it now in hindsight, but they really captured that. I loved. Whenever they interacted with each other, I feel like I was probably physically smiling.
Yeah, I don't think Thor would have time for Star-Lord. You think so?
But he had time for Rocket.
Yeah.
The little rabbit man.
Little rabbit man. I think he likes Rocket's style. And one of my favorite moments in the movie was when Rocket, Groot, and Thor discharge those CGI monsters.
Yeah.
And then I am Steve Rogers when he met Groot. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, that was... Because he had no idea. It was, I am Groot. I am Steve Rogers.
As Groot was murdering three people with this thing.
Dude, so Groot was just being his, like, unengaged teen self the whole time. When he really came out and started killing, like, he straight up harpooned three of those, like, those sectoid monsters at once and elevated them all in the – that was thousands of pounds of monster. I mean, he went like Luke Evans, Dracula Ascension, when he was just laying waste to that whole army, man. Like, just Dracula Untold.
Was that – I never saw Dracula Untold. Was it good?
Not really. Oh. It took a very – it had the guy – I can't think of his name – who played Tywin Lannister and as the original Dracula, spoiler alert, but the movie's a little old now. And it basically took a sorceress approach to the Dracula story and his origins and his powers. So it's almost like Dracula was also a sorcerer, like some blood necromancer, if you will.
Gotcha.
And so some of his powers in no way looked like what you think of as Dracula's powers. Some of them were just like video game turbo mode. The final battle in King Arthur.
Oh, yeah.
It's almost like he turned into a supercharged version of even that.
Jeez Louise.
And he like stabbed 1,000 people on a battlefield in a minute.
Really?
Yeah, I'm not kidding. It was kind of ridiculous. Some of the movie was cool, though. Don't get me wrong. There were some cool artistic licenses of Draculisms, but overall I wasn't impressed. I mean, I'll buy it. I still don't own it, but it is neat. By the way, Groot totally pulled a Luke Evans Dracula Untold.
We just got another listener question as just happened right now.
Wait, live? When I saw you looking, you were actually collecting a listener question?
Yeah. Megan came in here. Hey, Megan, you want to step in and talk about this question with me? No? Okay. But she asked it. So my wife Megan asked, should the Gamora Star-Lord kiss and I love you moment belong in Avengers or did it belong in a Guardians movie?
Oh, that's a good point. I think it belonged in a Guardians movie.
Yeah, that's what she did the same thing. And I felt the same way as well. You work for it for two movies and then you just throw it away and then you throw her off a cliff.
Yeah, I mean, the beginning of this movie let us know that they were there even if they weren't saying it yet. But yeah, it's like that belongs in a movie with more writing.
Yeah.
That belongs in a movie where you feel the stakes more.
Yeah. I like what you said about the writing. You're very right. It just moves. Like, it's not like that's a good point.
Yeah. I'm not calling it bad writing.
Oh, no,
it's
no,
just,
no.
Yeah. It's just the absence of good writing. It is, we are just writing to get ourselves to the next place and to let you know who's there.
Yeah. And like, I guess, I did like when they first introduced him, Star-Lord was singing, and then you cut down to Gamora and she's singing. I'm like, that's a really nice touch. Like, she's not annoyed by his shtick. She's like down to sing. I was like, that's a really cool thing.
Yeah. I mean, again, that's something that probably, as your wife pointed out, something that probably belonged in its in a Guardians movie.
I hope she comes back. I am a big Gamora fan. I like that character. I liked her a lot in the beginning of Guardians 2, where Groot waves at her and she's like battling a space monster and she's like, hi, Groot.
Like, that was, yeah.
I think she's a good actress, and I think they've really let her become a cool character. And I like the whole thing she had with Nebula. I thought that felt fresh. And so when Thanos threw her off that cliff, let's hope the Soul Stone has her soul and she's like partying with people and then she comes back.
You know, so I'm saying this knowing nothing about the comic series, whether or not they follow along with the comic series all the time. And I mean, not know nothing. I just don't remember any of this. This was my era of comics, but, it's like, but just as a movie goer and someone who really appreciates a great comic movie when they finally put one out, there's no way that they're not doing a third Guardians movie unless half the cast decide that they hate it.
Yeah.
Like, I don't see how it would be possible in reality for us not to get a third Guardians movie.
James Gunn already said he's writing it. So he's writing and directing it. It's already on the books. And
he's not doing it without them.
Like, I think he would be so, like, I know all those people who turn to dust, they're going to come back because of the Soul Stone. I think anybody that turned to dust is going to come back. I mean, Bucky still has more movies on his contract. Black Panther does.
Panther has a release date.
Yeah, exactly.
Is
yeah.
it in February again or next year or something?
2020.
Oh, 2020. Yeah.
And so, like, Spider-Man's coming back. So I just don't know about Gamora. She was smushed and she had green blood.
He has to come back.
Oh, so Megan said that they played that song so many times that they've like memorized it. So they're just jamming out on their ship. And, cause remember in the beginning where she's like, when she was talking to Star-Lord and he played that song, she's like, what kind of pelvic sorcery is this? So now she's like, they're jamming out to the Zune, like rocking out. All right. And we have one more question. And it is, who would be in your alt Avengers? So any movie characters ever?
I did not think of it that way.
I would put...
Go ahead.
Ash Williams from the Evil Dead series, especially Army of Darkness. That dude does not die. And he has battled so many demons that I think I would love to see him interacting with Thanos. Just because the bluster of him. I want Jack Burton, too, from Big Trouble in Little China. I want old Jack and old Ash just chatting with Thanos. And Thanos is just perplexed by these two idiot humans who are not afraid of them, of him at all. And they're kind of annoyed that, like, they destroyed their old, you know, Oldsmobile and in his truck. And Jack Burton just walks up and punches old, Ballsack Chin in the face.
Who called him that, Star-Lord?
Yeah. So, I mean, any movie characters. Cause remember I put a thing on Facebook the other day and I was like, these are the characters I'd love to see.
Well, that's all right. I'm gonna stick to my guns here. I was thinking more of a darker anti-hero side, and just by chance, and this wasn't on purpose, I ended up picking more from the Fox X-Men side. I was thinking of like a Wolverine, especially our old man Logan, our gritty old man Logan, Deadpool, Gambit, Psylocke, Venom, and just that Josh Brolin has to fight himself, Cable.
Dude, that'd be sweet.
I think that. And they're all like interesting dark characters. I think they would fit well on screen together.
I feel like Magneto would really be a pain in Thanos' butt. He would rip every ship apart.
I almost put him in, except I realized he kind of had his own alt Avengers with his little cadre of villains. So I decided to just leave Magneto out.
I would put some vibranium in a metal spear. And just have Magneto throw him at Thanos.
Dude, that would have been something.
I think could Magneto take out Superman?
Could, yes. Would he consistently win? I don't know. That's tough.
What about should?
I mean, this is so difficult. I also need to understand how they're meeting up in this battle.
Think West Side Story.
Like, oh, so they're approaching each other. They see each other coming.
Yeah, and they're snapping their fingers.
They both know the fight's coming. Okay, yep. I'm tempted to say Superman because of his speed.
All right. Wouldn't you love to see Superman and Magneto approaching each other in Jets and Sharks gear?
I feel like whoever does the first thing is going to win, though.
Yeah.
Well, because Superman's going to kill Magneto outright with one hit when he super fast comes up and you know, basically crushes his whole torso and punches through him like he was paper mache.
Yeah.
He's just going to be dead, right? And if Magneto gets in the first good, good assault somehow, no matter what it is, he'll devise, he's very intelligent. If he devises something and it hits, I think this is just the who acts first. Obviously, if they made a movie, it never goes that way. It has to be drawn out and last 30 minutes and destroy a city. But if it's not in a movie, if it's just like an intelligent discussion, I think it's going to be whoever lands the first blow in italics. I think that's what it is.
I'm rooting for Magneto.
I don't know. This is a problem in the comic verse. There are so many super powerful characters that it's hard to have a credible battle between two of these superpowers, especially when one of them otherwise is a human who can be torn through like any old flesh.
Did you ever read the Infinity Gauntlet stuff when you were younger?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I had a lot. Actually, I just gave away a lot of my comics a couple years ago when I lived in Texas because they had some water damage. Unfortunately, they weren't all in plastic, but there were a lot of those Infinity Wars era stuff in there.
Nice. I was a big fan of the X-Men with like Cable and Bishop mm-hmm. and all that kind of
stuff. I loved Bishop.
Yeah. And then I had all the Silver Surfer, Galactus, Morg. Remember when all the old people that used to help Galactus had to team up to fight Morg?
Mm-hmm.
So, yep. Like, I never got into – I never read Avengers, but I read, like, Silver Surfer, that kind of stuff. But I wasn't
an Avengers fan. I was just an Infinity Stone era fan.
Gotcha. I was X-Men.
Yeah.
That was my jam. All right. So, you know what I think was the best battle in Avengers? The battle on Titan, when they all use their superpowers together, and Peter Parker's like, magic! Like, I thought that was very – it was like a comic book when Mantis dropped on his head. You had the great visual of Spider-Man and Tony pulling on the glove. You had Doctor Strange holding his other arm. I thought that was probably my favorite thing of the. What was your favorite battle in this movie?
You know, mostly because it had the best reactive impact for me, but it was before I knew that this movie was a continuous actiongasm as well. Before I was a little desensitized, it was when Thor went at Thanos.
Yeah.
Because I didn't expect that to happen, and it was a typical, like, you know, Hulk moment. Did I say Hulk or Thor? I meant to say the Hulk.
Yeah, when Hulk. Yeah, when Hulk came at him in the beginning.
Yeah, when Hulk came at him, and I love that, you know, when Thanos Hulk smashed Hulk the way Hulk smashed Loki, I was just like, whoa, because you're right there learning how powerful Thanos is.
Yeah, and that's a great way to set up your villain is to have him beat up Hulk in the beginning. He beat up Hulk so bad, Hulk didn't want to come back.
Right. And people are watching and they're like, oh, Hulk's going to save the day. And meanwhile, Thanos' bad guys are just watching like, wait.
Oh, yeah. Didn't Ma say, let him have his fun?
Yeah. Yeah. That's right. It's like no one was panicking when Hulk was pounding someone after a surprise attack. Like, you just imagine whoever that is going to turn into gooey muck. But
so Ma has known Thanos for so long. He knows that Thanos wants to have his fun.
Well, and he also just knows that Hulk isn't a threat.
That's crazy.
Like,
Thor should have done his Crackle Thor stuff.
Yeah, that Thanos, though. I don't know if Thanos does want to have his fun. I don't know if he has fun.
Does Thanos just want to have fun?
I think that Thanos goes through life like MacReady losing computer chess wizard in the Arctic.
He just dumps alcohol on things when he loses?
So much of his life, I think, is that. Because he's so dispassionate. He's so overtaken with this burden that he needs to correct the universe because too many people are suffering. I think people like that, you know, I think they're never fun at a party.
Yeah, he'd be a pain. He's like, he'd be like, there's too many people here. And everyone's like, uh-oh.
Right.
Like, if you go to a movie and like, hey, the movie's sold out, Thanos is like, I'll take care of that. Like, no, don't take care of that. Like, yep. Just kill two people, take those seats.
But yeah, it's I don't know how much fun he likes to have. I mean, but I also don't think that he wants people to save him. I think that he would want to take care of that himself.
Let's see. What are some other pretty good moments in this thing that were unexpected?
How did you feel about the Starship Troopers monster alien assault on Wakanda?
It just
felt because that was in general. I didn't like that scenario. I liked some of the moments in it, but the scene itself, I thought that was actually one of the lesser battles for me. Even though I had the wonderful thing with Groot and Captain America, Groot had his really awesome moments in it. There was a good line.
I like when Wanda. Oh yeah, get this man a shield. Sorry to interrupt.
No, you're all right.
I loved when Wanda came down and lit up all those circular things, and Okoye was like, "Why wasn't she down here the whole time?"
Right.
And then she throws Proxima Midnight into one of those things, and she just like blood gets over Scarlett Johansson's face. She's like, "That was gross."
But yeah, yeah. It was like blue, wasn't it? It was bluish blood.
Oh, dude. And when Rocket goes up to Bucky and goes, "How much for that gun? How much for the arm? I'm going to get that arm.
I'm going to get that arm." Yeah, he's such a little mercenary. I'm going to get that arm.
But I mean, it got like kind of weird because there was just one entrance, and I'm assuming they had tons of firepower. They could have just blasted that entrance. Like, all those beasts were getting through.
Yeah.
Like, So, I mean, that part. I mean, it looked good on screen, but I gotta say, I enjoyed it more for the one-liners than the actual combat in it.
Yeah, I mean, I was just, that stuck out to me as, again, my least favorite action sequence.
I mean, the Thor fight I loved, or I'm sorry, the Hulk fight I loved. Actually, I loved it when Peter Parker, Doctor Strange, and Iron Man battled Quill, Mantis, and Drax. I thought that was a cool fight. Like, people got to show their different skills, and it showed that the Guardians match up really well. That was like a fun one. I really liked the battle on Titan with Tony, Strange, Spider-Man, Drax, Mantis. Like, I love that battle. And there's a lot of stakes, man, when Quill was freaking out over Gamora and he wrecks it. But I mean, I guess you kind of feel for him, but you're like, no, no. In my head, I'm like, you idiot. Like, I felt a lot during that fight.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I didn't feel anything during the CGI muck Starship Troopers battle.
And I was
how pissed off would you be if you were a Wakandan that was running through the water and one of those things jumped on you? Like, I don't know. I would have kept more security up there than just Elizabeth Olsen, too. Or Wanda.
Mm-hmm.
But that Wanda, she was more powerful than I even thought she was.
Well, again, like there was such a shuffle in power dynamic in this film.
And wasn't Vision capable of holding Thor's hammer? And then he got kind of punked out by that elf with the blade.
Yeah, well, that's just, they turned Vision from this uber powerful entity into, I don't know, a storytelling device.
Yeah.
He just seemed neutered of his power.
Oh, one more thing. When Thor showed up, Captain America goes, "Hey, you got a haircut?" And then Thor goes, "Oh, you copied my beard."
Right.
Like, those, the one-liners were the best part of that battle.
Yeah.
Do you get tired of battles where they just run, like, two groups of people run at each other?
I mean, it's just the classic staging of it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, it can be made to look great. I didn't think it looked great in Civil War when they did it at the airstrip. When they ran at each other, I thought that was very anticlimactic, seeing a handful of people run at each other. in that open area, I feel like they would have spread out and tried to ambush each other.
Remember that scene in one of the Austin Power movies where he's driving towards a guy with a steamroller and he's like 50 feet away?
No!
Yeah. No, I get what you're saying. I just, I mean, I like the visual of it. I think it looked good on trailers, but I mean, the final battle, I don't know.
It can look fantastic or it can look weak. Braveheart, it looked great every time they did it, but I think it just comes down to the heart and inspiration that went into crafting the scene.
I think in Braveheart, you just had people really running at each other. I feel like people lost their legs literally in that battle.
That's true. When you see humans, when you see humans sprinting, which was one of the best things about the Bourne movies, when you see people sprinting on screen, like, I don't know. Yeah, it gets you in it.
Yeah, I feel like some people were hurt in that one for sure.
Because I mean, they didn't do that in one take.
Yeah, oh, gosh.
You got some big dudes in there who I mean, you're not going to train sprints for 3 months before filming for that one scene. So you got some big dude. Tyler Mane was in that. Tyler Mane was sprinting. That dude is not designed to sprint.
He was in Braveheart?
Was it? Oh, no, I'm sorry. He was in Troy.
Tyler Mane? Jason was?
Mm-hmm. No, not Jason. He was Mike Myers. New Mike Myers.
Oh, wow. Tyler Mane was in Troy?
Yeah, he was Ajax.
Which one's Ajax?
The really, really, really tall one.
I thought that was Nathan Jones.
No, that was Boagrius in the first fight.
Jeez, man, there's a lot of icons in this Troy movie running at each other.
Yeah, Ajax had the really long hammer.
Gotcha.
It was a really long hammer. I mean, it was realistic, too. Like, the hammerhead wasn't even, like, as big as my head. It was just on a long pole. It was just a heavy rock at the end of, like, a polearm weapon. And he would swing it around his head and whack people in the head and mess them up.
Jeez Louise. Be like a potato.
But he was running that. Like, he's not designed to run. Yeah. That dude can't run. He's going to pull something, that big dude.
His quads are blowing.
Hey, Nathan Jones, if he ran, he'd just about kill himself.
That lactic acid, he would tighten up pretty quick. All right, so what do you think about the remaining people who lived? We have Captain America, Tony, Nebula is still alive. There is War Machine, Hulk, Johansson, Black Widow. I'm mixing character names with other people. Rocket's still around. What do you think? I mean, are they gonna find Thanos? Ant-Man's gotta probably pop up. Captain Marvel is gonna be there. I mean, what do you think? I don't know where it's going. And I kind of like that. I have no idea.
I don't see them making half a movie without those characters.
Yeah. With like Black Panther and Quill and all them.
I feel like whatever they're going to solve, they're going to solve maybe we'll go an hour without them and then get an hour and a half with them in the next movie. But like, I don't see us going a half a movie or more without those characters. I don't see that being the end of a movie to solve it. I see it being the first act.
Yeah. And you know what's weird? I don't really want spoilers for this. I'm perfectly happy to stay away from anything and just go watch it. And the nice thing is already finished shooting it. So we don't really have to worry about too many set photos coming out. Even though Mark Ruffalo did wreck the ending of this movie a year ago. There's an interview where he's with Don Cheadle. He's like, wait till you see this, man. He's like, half of the Avengers die. And Don Cheadle goes, dude, like, knock it off. Like, don't say that. And Ruffalo's like, what? Did I say something wrong? He's like, oh, man, I shouldn't have done that. He's like, they're going to be mad. He's like, am I in trouble? And Cheadle's like, just stop.
Just stop.
Yeah. And so he straight up, like, gave away stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I have no idea what's going to happen. I think Captain Marvel will play a big part. I don't really know what her skills are. I just hope Ant-Man mashes Thanos' brain.
I don't think we're going to see that, though.
I want Lewis from Ant-Man to come out and left hook Thanos into oblivion.
Lewis?
I want Michael Pena to knock out Thanos.
Well, I at least a try.
Yeah. And one more thing I liked about this movie a lot is Bucky Barnes got the smile.
Yeah, that was cute.
He never smiles in these movies. He's always glum.
He got to be a real dude this time without any fear of someone saying a secret set of words to turn him insane.
Thanos says it to him. He's like, no!
He finally just got to be a dude. Yeah, what if Thanos in the middle of the fight was just like, you know, fire truck, 67, red, skyscraper, and then he just goes on a killing spree.
Electric boogaloo.
Yeah, right. It's just whatever that chain of words.
And I know we're pinballing, but so did this movie. I also like the scene where Rocket's like, I have to be a captain. And then he goes and listens to Thor. Because Thor lost his dad, his mom, his brother, his sister, his Heimdall, his planet, most of his people. Like, he was in a rough state, Thor. And I like that Rocket just went and listened to him.
And his eye.
Yeah, and his eye.
And his eye. Oh, and his hammer.
Oh, and his hammer. And like, I like that Rocket just sat down with him and listened to him. I thought that was kind of like a cool scene.
I guess it's because like in that moment, Thor was the only one in the room who felt that he didn't have as much as Rocket felt that he didn't have. They both felt like they had nothing, and Rocket finally had someone that he could identify with.
Oh, man.
Right? I mean, he's always so busy self-loathing, and no one would ever have anything to compare to him hating his own existence. until he hears Thor's story.
When you look back at this movie, are you going to think about the action scenes, or are you just going to think about the character dynamics and kind of the quips?
Well, honestly, most of the character dynamics are coming out because we're talking about them, and now I'll always have them in mind. Without this conversation, I just would have been remembering the action-gasm most of the time until I see it again, I guess.
I think the scene that made me the happiest, since I'm a huge Iron Man homer, I liked when Thanos looked at Iron Man and was like, I like you. He's like, Thanos really respected Tony.
Yeah, he there were a few that he respected. Yeah, I mean, he...
And Quill, he's like, I like you.
Yeah, I mean, I liked his mania. I mean, he was obsessed with doing this. But so there were so many times where at first I was almost upset that he could have killed more of the Avengers, but he would just leave. But I kind of later appreciated, it's like, wait a minute. It wasn't his, he had decided that it wasn't his duty to decide who lives or dies. He was basically only going to kill you if you made him kill you by trying to stop him. But once he defeated you in a fight and you were unconscious, the fight's over. Like, he's not going to stomp on your head to end you to keep you from stopping him in the future, because that's not his decision to kill.
Yeah, and you know when they split up Nebula's people on her planet? They just did it at random, and Thanos had no part of it.
Right, yeah. It's
It could have been either or side that they shot. So that's pretty interesting.
What if when he snapped his fingers, he was one of the 50-50 that got raptured away?
That would be pretty funny. He's like, oh no! But that gauntlet got destroyed, right? And then he looked hurt.
So, yeah, it looked pretty ravaged, but of course, and the gauntlet was made to harness the power of the Infinity Stones. So does that mean that he no longer has the device capable of harnessing the power of the Infinity Stones?
Yeah, he must not. Have that.
Right?
Yeah.
It because they did visually show us that it was damaged.
Yep.
And so even though the stones were still there, so he would need to craft something new, or otherwise, I guess, utilize them individually or something. I'm just word vomiting now. But it seems to me that, like, he no longer can choose life or death with the snap of a finger unless he's only harnessing or no, maybe no one stone can do that. Maybe he's literally no longer capable of that.
Yeah.
Because he needed all of the Infinity Stones in order to expedite that task.
Now he could just show up with a blue stone and go on a planet like Ronan did. If he touches a planet, he destroys the whole thing. But that's not half. So he doesn't want to do that. That's interesting. Oh, and one more thing. Red Skull from Captain America the First Avenger.
That was interesting, too, because when that happened... I haven't seen the first Captain America movie in so long. I didn't remember what happened to him.
Yeah, he got sucked into something.
And so when I first saw him, I heard someone behind me actually whisper, "That's Doctor Doom." And I'm just like, "That's not Doctor Doom. He's red." but that almost felt like a Doom character at first until you really see him. And yeah, the red, and I'm just like, "Holy shit." Like, and so I was just sitting there thinking, how is he here? Even though he kind of explained it, I guess I just need to rewatch all these like 19 films before I see the new Avengers. Is that how many there are now?
Yeah, 19.
God, that's a lot of movies to watch.
That's a lot of movies.
It's a lot of movies. But yeah, I gotta see that first Avenger just to see how that happened. Or did they just like pull some malarkey here?
When I heard about all the stones, I'm like, I think they're going to bring back Red Skull in my head because he got sucked away by one of the stones.
See, I didn't remember that at all.
Yeah, so like he just couldn't hold the power. I got the power.
And now he's doomed to do that. That's an interesting fate.
Yeah, you have to walk other people to it, what you can't possess. Well,
that's a very, I mean, we have, you know, some of these mythological or religious themes, this basically rapture that Thanos is, you know, that Thanos did,
yeah.
You know, and a lot of these savior-like things and coming back from the dead throughout these movies. But, like, this is different. This is like a classical mythology thing. And I don't mean literally like Thor is a Norse god. I mean, like, they turned him into, like, Charon the boatman. The ferryman,
yeah,
in Greek mythology, who ushers you across the river Styx. Like, they made him into, like, this mythical pathway steward Like that was really cool. That felt like you're watching a fantasy movie or something. That's like some Lord of the Rings meets legend shit.
Yeah, it's interesting how they're tying in the fantasy and then the magic and then the mythological kind of stuff. It's pretty, they're really blending everything.
Well, and you know, and between Thor and their notions of introducing magic and godliness, right, as what, you know, what we call science, yeah, you call magic.
Yeah.
And they're just from another world. And so now we have all these different kinds of life forms. And then there's the literal magic that's going on with these stones. And yeah, we've just opened the floodgates in this movie universe to like anything can go. But I think they're doing a good job at controlling the anything from getting too haphazard.
Yeah. Is Wanda magic, or is she like, she was a science project? I know they worked on her.
Who's Wanda?
Scarlet Witch.
The Scarlet Witch. Okay. I think that was she. She and Quicksilver. They were both experimented on, weren't they?
Yeah.
Her brother.
So she's got something like that.
Yeah, because they were brother and sister, and they had completely dissimilar abilities.
I tell you what, though, at the end of the day, you and I are talking about these comic book movies. Just, it's fun doing this. I think Marvel has been very successful over the last 10 years.
Oh, yeah.
Well, characters.
Even the movies that they did that I wasn't very fond of, let me rephrase. Even the movies that I thought were their worst, usually I could still enjoy watching.
Yeah.
Except for Iron Man 3, which I know you like, but I will never want to watch that movie again. That's unless nice. Unless it is explicitly for the purpose of rewatching all the movies in order. But you like that character, Trevor?
Yeah,
is that
it's my
Sam
second,
Rockwell?
It's my second favorite, Ben Kingsley. It's my second favorite Marvel movie. I like Shane Black's writing. I like that. I just like Tony. I like him on the screen. I like that he doesn't have the Iron Man suit on a lot. I like that Trevor is just, there's a line in the movie where like, you know, I was on drugs, and Tony's like, did they get you off the drugs? He's like, no, they gave me more.
Like, right. No, I mean, I liked his character. But the film itself overall just, I don't know. I didn't like it.
No, it's fine. I get why people don't. I just, for some reason, it works on me. Like, the good thing is about us is we're Marvel fans, but we're not Marvel fans. Like, hey.
I'm not breaking my beer glass in front of me because you disagree with my opinion about this. They didn't do honor to this movie, and they changed this from the comic book. And,
Thanos didn't fart lightning, so I hate this new movie.
Did he fart lightning ever in the comic?
No.
I was just curious. Maybe you were speaking from a canonical standpoint.
That's some like, that'd be, I hate this movie because he didn't fart lightning.
Dude, if he farted lightning, though, then I'd be extra pissed that Thor didn't get his crackle.
Yeah. I mean, oh, gosh.
Oh my God. Thor would have the crackle and Thanos would have that pop.
This is a chase scene where Thanos is just farting lightning and flying through the air.
Yeah, who needs James Bond's little like rear firing missiles from the car when you can just fart lightning out of the exhaust?
That's how he powered that chair that was floating. Was he was just in the chair farting.
I'm surprised we didn't ever see that chair in this movie.
Well, Thanos made fun of it. Remember? Cause she's like, I hate that chair. And like, Thanos is like, yeah. Like, they made fun of his floating chair in this movie.
But the chair wasn't floating in this one.
Yeah, but like, that's why, because they were making fun of like his other floating seat.
Okay. I didn't even realize that.
I guess, any plugs?
I got a few. Well, you know, Dave Koenig, you can find him on Twitter. He's a fiend on film. He's been firing us some questions. He likes sharing our pod. He was live messaging me during his listening of our pod. Keep an eye out for him. He has his Asian Cinema Takeout magazine, movie magazine, coming out soon. One of my articles is in it. And he's on the magnificent work of Dave K on WordPress, just like us. There's at BuyHorror on Twitter, or BuyHorror.com. Again, enthusiastic sharer of our work. Really appreciate that. Scream tweets on Twitter. Also, great sharer of our material. At Mr. Horror and at Isaac Thorne. Again, both these fellows on Twitter, they're very gracious, in sharing our material. I really hope that they're big fans of the show and that they don't unfriend us because they're major Marvel fans who go by the canon of the comics that we don't appreciate the same. But again, all these people who regularly support us, you know, Thanks so much. Keep sending us your questions and keep live messaging me while you're listening to the pod.
I've actually had that before. I had people messaging me too, and it's kind of fun when they're doing that. You can kind of talk with them about it. It's a good time. But yeah, guys, as always, go to www.moviesfilmsandflix.com. That's moviesfilmsandflix.com. Go to iTunes, Stitcher, Podbean, Blog Talk Radio, listen to our podcast, rate, review, subscribe on iTunes. Also, head to our website and check out everything we write. We've written a lot of stuff. Go to John's Horror Corner's Index is on our front page. We have our podcast there. If you want to read all my dumb data, it's on MFF Data, just on the homepage there. Check out everything we've written. And if you ever have any questions, what are we potting about next week? We're doing, Cure for Wellness?
Sure.
Do you have enough time for that one?
I think so.
All right. I think we're doing Cure for Wellness next week.
We're going to do a Cure for Wellness. Well, we are now.
Yeah, so we're going to do
We just said it. We got to stick with it.
All right, so we're doing Cure for Wellness next week.
Wait, we got to pause right there because a lot of people might not know what on earth that movie is. You all got to check out online. This is the most bonkers Gore Verbinski film ever made in a world where Gore Verbinski normally makes bonkers movies.
It's a $60 million R-rated film with no major A-list stars. 2.5 hours. It goes to some very weird places, but it's beautifully shot, looks great. And I think it's ripe. Like, we love covering movies like Event Horizon and Bram Stoker's Dracula. This is kind of in our wheelhouse, this underappreciated, really well-made horror psychological film.
I swear every 30 minutes for the whole first 2 hours, people will think it is a different genre of film.
Yeah, and then it goes bat crazy.
Yeah, now I'm excited to do this next week. We're doing this next week.
All right, cool. So Cure for Wellness next week. If we had something else in front of that, my bad. I'm pretty sure we're doing Cure for Wellness.
Cure for Wellness.
All right, well, we're doing that now.
Send us your listener questions about Cure for Wellness.
Right. So for me, Mark Hoffmeyer, and John didn't know that Thanos farted lightning. Levengood, this is Movies, Films, and Flicks. We'll see you next week when we do The Cure for Wellness.